Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Let's Talk Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Robert Smith, along with my co-host, who's not joining me today, so it's just me. But that's all right. Adam's still dealing with some family issues. So, everyone, please say a little prayer on my behalf. Hopefully, I don't mess this up too bad. So, my initial thoughts going into this Week 12 matchup against the 49ers. This is tough. Right, we're coming off a heartbreaking divisional loss against the Rams. That's a game the Seahawks should have won. And let's hope there's not a little bit of hangover from the weekend. You know, now we have to turn around in a short week to go face an absolutely red hot 49ers team. You know, it's a tough ask. It's a tough ask for anybody to be able to come out here and achieve a win against that team. First, let's get into some news. So we got some league news. The Pittsburgh Steelers went out and they fired their offensive coordinator, Matt Canada, after another abysmal offensive outing. They've had a few of them this year, which is not something we've come to expect from the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's also surprising because I personally consider Pittsburgh to be one of the most stable franchises in the NFL. And I believe mid-season coaching changes, though not an absolute tell, it's not the end-all be-all, but I believe mid-season coaching changes are indicative of a poorly run franchise. But I can't put the Steelers in that category because overall, I think the Steelers are one of the better run franchises in the NFL. In fact, this is the first time that the Steelers have fired either a head coach or coordinator mid-season since 1941. That's 80 years of mid-season stability for that franchise. Let's hope this is what they needed. But I'm still not a fan of mid-season firings. I think it just adds turmoil to a team. And if you don't have consistency and an heir apparent already on the coaching staff, I think it kind of leaves your team in flux a little bit. So, you know, hopefully this is what Steelers needed and they can get out and do what they have to do. We've seen a lot more firings earlier this year than I would have normally wanted to see. And it's rough. It's rough. A lot of those coaches losing their jobs, and sometimes it's their fault. Sometimes it's a matter of circumstance. And sometimes there are coaches still coaching in this league who probably deserve to be on that mid-season firing list. The team has had some news. The Seahawks rookie safety Jarek Reed II tore his ACL and is out for the remainder of the season. Though, as of this recording, he has yet to be put on injured reserve. I have to tell you, this is tough. This really kind of hurts the Seahawks, especially that special teams unit. He was top five in special teams tackles in the league. He was always the first one down on punts, on kickoffs. You always saw his number flash across the screen as he was contending to be the first one down there to make the tackle. He brings youth, energy, athleticism. This is something I believe the Seahawks are going to need to find a way to recover. We don't have a player like a Joey Blunt on the practice squad that they can just call up who can fill that core special teamer role. It's tough, and my heart goes out to Jarek Reed, really one of my favorite young players to watch. We'll get to see him next year as he recovers from this ACL injury. And best wishes, please recover from that injury correctly. Don't rush back. I believe he has a place on this team for years to come. So let's get him healed up right and get him back in the action next year. Some happy news. Devin Witherspoon was yet again the highest graded defensive rookie by PFF for week 11. He ended with a grade of 82.7, once again showing the world that he is a legit player in this league and that the Seahawks once again added to just a loaded secondary. It's a feel-good story out of the organization. This is something that kind of hit me in the feels, right? I read the story. I was like, oh, that's just an awesome story. And that's that the 16-year-old son of former Seahawks backup quarterback, the late Tavares Jackson, rest in peace, was at the practice facility as part of a Make-A-Wish trip. Tavares Jackson II has dealt with a lifelong heart condition. He's already had, I believe, 7 or 8 heart surgeries, and he's only 16 years old. His wish was to reconnect with the team that his dad won that Super Bowl ring with, as he was Russell Wilson's backup there for that run in the early teens. So yeah, it's amazing. Best of luck to that young man as he navigates his heart condition, and a huge shout out to the Seahawks as well as the Make-A-Wish Foundation just for being able to make that happen and get him in the building and able to reconnect with a team that he feels close to and drawn to. There's a great article about this actually on the Seahawks website written by John Boyle, and I'll go ahead and link that in the description. So please check that out. All right, moving on to transactions. And see, you can tell I'm missing Adam already. I am way behind on getting these topic banners up for those of you watching on YouTube. So the transactions that the Seahawks made this week, once again, short week. It's only been 4 days, so they have not made a lot of transactions. But something that caught me off guard, we know that Jason Peters has stepped up and is playing really well at right tackle. We know Abe Lucas is on his way back into the roster from injured reserve. He's been practicing and things are looking better for him. Stone Forsythe, though primarily the backup at left tackle, has spent time at right tackle and looked pretty good in his time over there. But the team went out and they released backup offensive tackle Jake Curran, who actually started 3 or 4 games for the Seahawks this year. So that was surprising to me. I thought they might release one of the young guys who hasn't had a chance to see game action and keep someone like Jake Curran around. But I think they may have seen all that they needed to see out of him. And he was released a few days ago from the team. They also designated defensive back Kobe Bryant to return from injured reserve. I know this one is going to be great news to Adam. Kobe Bryant is one of those players that he feels very strongly about and who we really like on this podcast. He's definitely a favorite of the podcast. Going into this week, we know the Seahawks were banged up coming out of Sunday with the Rams. In that game, we saw Jerick Reed go out. We saw Geno Smith come out of the game. We saw Kenneth Walker go down. I mean, that's 2 main starters on offense and a core special teamer all went out during that game. Obviously, we know that Jerick Reed tore that ACL and he's not going to be able to suit up for the Seahawks again this year. Kenneth Walker has a, quote, legit oblique injury. And that's never a good case when Pete Carroll throws out the legit qualifier when talking about an injury. And Geno Smith, he has a bruise on that triceps tendon down by his elbow. And the only thing I can equate that to, at least the way that I try to wrap my brain around, is that's just like a bad funny bone hit every time you move your arm. So he's dealing with the nerve issues that come with having a contusion in that area of his arm. So it's pretty scary. And hopefully all those guys are ready to go. Looking at the actual injury report, obviously safety Jerick Reed is out and doubtful. We have Kenneth Walker and Dariq Young. Now, this hurts because the Seahawks don't normally activate players who are doubtful. A lot of teams, you'll see, they're a little more liberal with the use of these game day designations. The Seahawks haven't had a player active who was doubtful since 2014, 2015. So it's not something they commonly do. If someone's listed as doubtful, there's a great chance they're not going to play. And so right here, we have to read these tea leaves and say, okay, we're going to be down our wide receiver four with Derek Young. That means if we do need to bring that fourth wide receiver on, it's going to have to be D. Eskridge or perhaps maybe Kenny McIntosh, who should be seeing his first action this week, going and playing a little bit of slot receiver. Obviously, you can tell that I'm leaning that way. I think I've seen all that I want to see from D. Eskridge. And then we have our running back one, who probably most likely will not be playing in this game. That means we're going to need a heavy dose of Zach Charbonnet. DJ Dallas is going to need to contribute on offense, as well as the aforementioned Kenny McIntosh. Let's see what he brings to the table. Questionable, we have Geno Smith. Pete Carroll's already come out and said that Geno Smith will play. Right tackle, Abe Lucas, who hasn't officially been activated from injured reserve. So the questionable designation, I guess technically, if they have a roster spot, they could activate him at any point. So that might be why he's on this questionable list. Although Pete Carroll did come out and say that he won't play at all against the Niners. So look for his activation to happen after this game some point. All right, so that's it for the Seahawks. The 49ers coming into this game generally healthy. Out, there's safety Talanoa Hufanga, who was actually placed on injured reserve this week with a torn ACL. It's of note because he, I believe, is one of the most talented players in their secondary. He's a leader back there. He brings a ton of energy. So that's a big, big loss for the 49ers. And then questionable, we have starting guards Aaron Banks and Spencer Burford. So that's both their starting guards. They're both questionable. I'm assuming that they're going to play. But yeah, let's see how that shakes out for the 49ers. I sat down, I looked at the teams, the rosters, the trends that they've been setting over the past few games, the stats, where these teams match up. And normally, I have Adam or one of the great guys over at 12 Talk Podcast to bounce these ideas off of. And, oh, what do you think the team needs to do to succeed? Well, I sat down, I came up with my five keys to success for this game. And my number one key to success for the Seahawks is going to be third down efficiency. What can the Seahawks do on third down? They are one of the worst teams in the league at converting third downs on offense. They're sitting right about 30th, I believe. And that's on the season. So they have not been good all year. In fact, on Sunday, they started out against the Rams 3 of 3. So we nailed our first three third downs. I was like, all right, we've turned the table. This offense is clicking. We're efficiently setting up these third downs and we're able to convert them. And then the team went on and ended the game. After starting 3 of 3, they ended the game with a total of 5 of 15 third downs converted. There's no way you're going to win a ball game only converting 30% of your third downs. So in order for this key to be successful, I have the Seahawks offense needs to convert 50% of their third downs. 50%. So think about that. It's bad when the definition of average, 50%, is considered a good thing and a great achievement by this offense. But that's where I have my pass-fail metric for this first key to success. My second key to success here is we have to keep running the ball. We know Kenneth Walker is out. Well, he's doubtful. Chances are he's not going to play. That doesn't mean the offense needs to give up on the running game. In fact, they should probably lean into the running game a little bit harder with Geno Smith being banged up with that elbow. So we need a heavy dose of Zach Charbonnet, you know, sprinkle in a little change of pace. Let's get DJ Dallas in there. Kenny McIntosh, let's see what he can do in his NFL debut. But my metric here for my second key to success, Charbonnet needs over 18 carries himself, and Shane Waldron needs to call at least 24 running plays. That's not 24 running plays because Geno Smith scrambled because he got some pressure. Nothing like that. No, I need actual called running plays. And we'll see. I mean, we know Shane Waldron is not the best at executing a balanced offense. But that doesn't mean it's not a good metric for success. All right, our third key to success is stop the run. This defense held the Rams to under 100 yards rushing. And I'm not saying the Rams rushing attack is the same as the 49ers rushing attack, but it plays a similar role in how the team set up other plays. So what we need to do is have a similar performance, right? We need to take control of that rushing game defensively and kind of force the 49ers to become one-dimensional. They're sixth in the NFL. They're averaging 132.7 yards per game on the ground. So let's force the Niners to put the ball in Brock Purdy's hands and force him to beat us against our talented secondary, because Christian McCaffrey has looked fantastic this year. He already has over 800 yards rushing, and it doesn't look like he's stopping anytime soon. I mean, he is looking great. So the metric here for pass fail is we need to keep the 49ers under 100 yards rushing. Let's keep them well below their average. This defense is capable. We have a stout defensive line who only got better with the addition of Leonard Williams. With Bobby Wagner and Jordan Brooks roaming the middle of this 3-4, we have quite a formidable linebacking core. And so they can do this. This is a very achievable metric. So let's keep the 49ers under 100 yards rushing. All right, this fourth key to success, we need to get pressure, right? Pressure, pressure, pressure. Let's get after the quarterback. Brock Purdy has an offensive PFF grade of 91.4 when he's not under pressure, and a PFF grade of 54 when he is. So the 49ers, like I said earlier, have both starting guards listed as questionable. I'm expecting them to start, but might there be an opportunity? Might Jaron Reed, Leonard Williams, can we get a little inside pressure? We collapse that pocket, force Brock Purdy to move and feel that pressure? I think we can. I think we have a legitimate chance to do it. So my metric here is I would like to see 20 total pressures over the course of the game. That's sacks, quarterback hits, quarterback hurries. Let's make Brock Purdy feel this team and see if maybe he makes a little bit of a mistake and that talented secondary can generate some turnovers. All right, our fifth key to success. Come on, Seahawks. You got to clean up the penalties. 12 penalties for 130 yards against the Rams it's unacceptable. It's unacceptable at any level of football. You have middle schoolers go out and they get 12 penalties for 130 yards. Their coaches are going to be screaming at them. There's no reason that professional football players should get these kind of penalty tallies. The Seahawks are the most penalized team in the league. They can't do that. Right? Okay, so if you look at the penalties from Sunday, yes, there was that egregiously bad call in the end zone, pass interference against Devin Witherspoon when Puka Nacua tripped over Quandre Diggs and his own feet. It's not a penalty. Wasn't a penalty. Shouldn't have been a penalty, especially not a penalty in that situation of the game. It was a bad call. The NFL has not come out and admitted it yet, but they need to. It was a bad call. But other than that one, every other penalty, some of them were a little close, but every other penalty called in that Rams game was an actual penalty. So yeah, the Seahawks do take blame for their record when it comes to penalties this season. My metric for pass-fail on this one is going to be 50 yards in penalty yardage. It's going to happen. You're going to have a false start. You're going to have a hold here or there. That's football. Let's keep this under 50 yards. All right. I'm not going to have a little back and forth with Adam like I normally do when we talk about position comparisons. And I may have needed it this episode, because I tell you, as much as I wanted to be a homer and just pick the Seahawks every chance I get, I couldn't do it. So starting out with the quarterback, I gave this to Geno Smith and the Seahawks. Though looking at it from a micro lens, this 1 week, it's probably a little closer than it would have been earlier in the season because Geno's injured. How did he bounce back from that injury? Did they get Drew Lock any reps in practice on a short week? I mean, he looked pretty lost when he got in the game on Sunday. So I want to roll with Geno, and hopefully his arm is able to take him there. But I did give this quarterback comparison to the Seahawks. Running back. Sorry, guys, I got to give this to the 49ers. Without Walker, this goes to the 49ers. But honestly, even if Walker was playing, I'm probably going to give the edge to Christian McCaffrey. Like I said, he's playing terrific, and he is a dynamic player. He can hit you both receiving the ball and rushing the football. And like I said, he already has over 800 yards rushing on the season. The wide receiver room. I'm pretty much on record by saying the Seahawks have one of, if not the most talented wide receiver room in the NFL. And I still believe that. I like what Deebo Samuel and the Niners can do, players that they have in their wide receiver core, but I got to give this one to Seattle. We are loaded, and especially if they're able to get guys in the right position and utilize their traits properly, the Seahawks wide receivers are probably going to be the X factor on this offense. Tight ends. I love the Seahawks tight end room. We have guys who can block. We have athletic freaks for the size of human that they are. But I got to give this to the 49ers. This is one of those few times where I'm going to let one player, and that player is George Kittle, sway me over the talented and balanced Seahawks tight end room. This is a tough matchup. It'll be a real tough matchup for our linebackers and safeties coming up against George Kittle. But I got to give this matchup to the 49ers. All right, offensive line. This one also went to the 49ers. Listen, I'm not sold on the right side of our offensive line. On the left side, Charles Cross has played great since coming back from injury. Damian Lewis has had some mistakes, but overall, I can't complain with the plays he's been making. On that right side, though, obviously, right tackle's been in flux. We've had Stone Forsythe over there. We've had Jason Peters over there. Obviously, Jake Curran is no longer on the team, but he's played time at right tackle. We don't really have an answer. The answer is Abe Lucas, and he's still coming back from injury. And then Phil Haynes at left guard. I'm not quite sold on him as that starting right guard. He seems to do okay-ish. He's playing okay-ish, but he always has one really big mistake. For example, on Sunday, that was completely getting owned by Aaron Donald, which many offensive linemen have done. Many offensive linemen have looked foolish going up against Aaron Donald over his career. And Phil Haynes is definitely added to the list of them because he got beat on a move and was just left blocking air when Geno Smith got injured due to that hit from Aaron Donald. So I got to give this matchup to the 49ers. I think their offensive linemen, though a little banged up, both their guards are questionable. I'm going to give this matchup to the 49ers. Defensive line. Outside of the Eagles, I'm not sure there's a better defensive line in the NFL right now than the San Francisco 49ers. Yeah. They added Chase Young, and it only made them better. So it's no question the defensive line matchup is going to the 49ers. Let's see what the Seahawks can do to get out there and actually stop these guys. We're definitely going to need tight ends chipping on both Bosa and Chase Young, because both of those guys can wreck your offensive line. Linebackers, here we go. I'm giving this one to the Seahawks. Listen, Fred Warner, Dre Greenlaw, they're fantastic linebackers. But I will take the combination of Bobby Wagner and Jordan Brooks over any combination of linebackers in the NFL right now on a team. So, no question, that one's going to the Seahawks. Same with the defensive backs room. Seahawks, all the way. The raw talent in the Seahawks secondary is second to none in the NFL. And then with the 49ers losing Hufanga, going out on injured reserve, the Seahawks easily take this one. Here it is, guys. Game predictions. I like cheering on the Seahawks. I'm a pretty positive guy when it comes to the Seahawks, and I believe I've taken them to win just about every game this year in my prediction. And in fact, the one game that I thought they would lose, they actually ended up winning. Because if I'm not mistaken, that was Detroit. But I'm sorry, guys. I can't pick the Seahawks to win this week. The sports books have them 7-point underdogs, and they have them that way for a reason. The Seahawks offense has not been living up to its potential. It's trending in the wrong direction. So I don't know if they can put up the points to stay with a team like the San Francisco 49ers. I hope I'm wrong. I want to be wrong. Let's hope the 12s out there can just inject this massive amount of energy into the team, and they can rise above on this Thanksgiving game. But as for me, as for this prediction right now, I have the San Francisco 49ers 23, the Seattle Seahawks 18. I think they beat the sports book. I think the Seahawks cover, but this offense is going to need to get on the right page. Shane Waldron needs to call a balanced offense in order to get this team going. We need to succeed on third downs. All these little things will contribute. And if we do all of those things right, then I am 100% fine being wrong. So my final thoughts on this game is that basically this game is for the division. Last week, we mentioned Rams and then these four games coming up in front of us were like a mini playoffs in the middle of the season. Obviously, the Seahawks dropped an egg there by losing to the Rams, thus exiting the midseason playoffs. But since I made up the midseason playoffs, I can make them up again. So let's start it right now. These are the types of teams that the Seahawks will face when they make the playoffs. So they need to execute. They need to be able to rise above and face stiff competition, play to the level of their competition, or greater. So that's what this game is. This game is for the lead in the NFC West, as it will end up at the end of the season. If we split with the 49ers, they will take the division, I believe, on a tiebreaker. If both teams win the games they're supposed to win. And right now, our playoff chances sit at 54% after that loss to the Rams. But if we win this game against the 49ers, that 54% jumps to 98%. And I like that, right? Let's win this game. Let's jump to 98%, still have a chance at the division, have a chance to host a wild card game. But you got to take care of business. You got to take care of business first here in this first game against a really tough 49ers team. Thank you for listening to Let's Talk Seahawks, the podcast for fans like you. Hopefully I did okay doing this by myself, not being able to bounce conversation off somebody else. And thank you for sticking with me and listening all this time. If you're listening in the audio world, thank you. If you're watching us or a replay of this live stream on YouTube, thank you. Please hit that subscribe and thumbs up if you like the show. Once again, thank you for watching. And as always, go Hawks.